Hey there, and welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastors Bob Thune and Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life, and today we're talking about discipleship and counter formation.
Man, you guys are football play? You guys have really been geeking out on this podcast lately.
Not me.
Counter formation. That sounds football. Yeah. Are we talking football?
It's a counter play we used to run.
But I think it's counter hyphen formation. I think it's like a...
You ever run that?
It's a big Mike Kresnick word.
You're going one way, but then you go the other way. Counter.
You counter
that. Hey, guys, listen up. It's the Wednesday Conversation's 3-year birthday.
Is that all? It feels like it's been 5 years.
3 years.
Just kidding.
For every Wednesday.
Hey, that's exciting.
People have
happy birthday to us.
Some people that have been listening to us for 3 years.
Probably. Can you believe it? They need a medal.
Yeah.
Do you think there's anyone who's listened to every episode for the last 3 years?
No.
Maybe Justin Curtis.
Do,
maybe.
Probably Justin Curtis.
I still need to go back and listen to the very first episode.
Nah, they weren't that great.
So if you've been listening to us, having conversations with us for the last 3 years, maybe year and a half, thanks for listening.
Guys, I've enjoyed this. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a good rhythm in my schedule to just sit down and chat with you guys every time we do this.
Unedited conversations, just raw conversations.
Only knew what happened behind the scenes.
Well, guys, we got a question from our listener. Not our listener.
one of our listeners.
One of the 12 people that listen to this podcast.
Come on.
Questions from Zoe. She says, much of my small group discussions turn toward head knowledge or what we are learning, but we are rarely engaged on the heart level or captured by the imagination. It turns into, what did you learn from the sermon? And everyone proceeds to look at their notes. How can we form our small groups to look differently so that we are formed as disciples?
And in her question, Zoe sort of references the work of James K. A. Smith, who will be on this podcast in a few months.
Teaser.
Happy birthday, Teaser Wednesday alert. Conversation. James
so,
Smith.
Zoe, here's what we're going to do. I'll just ask James K. Smith your question and let him answer. But first we'll give our thoughts, because obviously we're almost as intelligent as James K. Smith on these matters.
Added together?
Yeah, added to... Nope, I don't think so. but she's getting after, okay, how do we get after formation in small groups and not just data information? So it's kind of a information versus formation question.
Yeah, and I think it's super timely in light of, I was listening to an interview with Dreher, who says that the culture has definitely captured imagination way better than Christians have. And so if we only resort to intellect and disregard heart level imagination, then we're already losing in the culture. And so it's a super timely question for us to be batting around.
What are we talking about when you said heart level imagination? Like
thoughts that actually change your life. So I think what her question is getting at too is just like, hey, we can bat around content in our heads, but if it's not actually shaping us, or what Dreher said was get down into my bones, then it's not going to change you.
Yeah. And I want to answer this question focused on the way she's asking it, which is, okay, she's just leading a small group. She's not in charge of what the sermon is on Sunday. She's not in charge of planning the liturgy, right? She's not influencing the shaping of the imagination on that level. She's just saying, hey, I lead a small group every week, and it seems like we all devolve to like get ready to get out their notes and talk about the sermon. What does it actually look like to accomplish counter formation? So to form people in the Christian story in ways that sort of counteract the ways that the culture is seeking to form us and shape us in, or deform us, perhaps more accurately.
So the thing about this question that is getting me thinking is even just the structure of small group. I don't know. I don't know if this is a helpful way to take the conversation, but do we need to fundamentally, if we're going to get at formation, even start to question how we do small group? Is that part of this?
Sure.
So what does that look like? Because the typical small group is that, right? It's geared more for a head exercise and or an accountability exercise. So what are the ways that we could potentially expand the way we do small group to get at formation?
So yeah, Chris, we could go into the question of how do we need to do small groups differently, but I think that's kind of what she's asking is like, okay, I'm the leader, and so I can steer this group in a direction. what would you say to someone like her who's saying, okay, great, but how do, what turn do I make? What street, you know, how do I turn this thing in a different direction?
I mean, one simple way to do that, just, I'm just shooting off the cuff here, but one way to get your small group past what did you think of that content and did you agree or disagree is to actually ask the implicit question behind that, which is, what did that do to you when that was said? So I don't know how you interact with that in a deeper way, but that's just what's coming to mind right away.
If you think about what are the things that form us, here's what I start to think about. This is one of the reasons why I'm sort of insistent that every one of our gospel communities share a meal together, because I think there's something about sharing a meal and just that rhythm of we're showing up, we're eating together, we're thanking God for food, and we're sitting around a table and conversing, or sitting in a living room and conversing, or spilling our food on the floor and conversing, whatever.
For real.
That starts to form a rhythm. So think about liturgy, right? Liturgy is a pattern. It's a rhythm. It's something that becomes predictable. And if you think about the way that culture forms us, it forms us through song, movie, storytelling, and sort of an implicit narrative that says, here's why you exist and here's where the good life is found. And so if we're trying to immerse people in a different story that says, nope, here's where the good life is found, this cultural narrative is shallow and not true. Some of that is very implicit. Like, it's not in just how do you shape the conversation differently. It's, are we sharing a meal together? Is there a rhythm and a pattern that creates a sense of like, man, every Thursday night we're here doing this same thing. I think that can be one of the most formative things, is just the regularness, the day in, day out, week in, week out. Hey, every Thursday or every whatever, we're gathered here and we're doing this together. Another thing that came to my mind as you were talking, Dusty, is just this is one of the reasons why in almost every gospel community I've led for the last 6 years, we've started by asking people to tell their story. Mm-hmm. Because I think narrating your story, by which I mean not tell me how you came to Jesus, but like talk to me about your life. What was your family growing up like? What were the significant instances or relationships that marked you for good or ill? What are the big things that have happened in your life that define you or that have been defining moments for you? Now you're getting to a level in people's experience of one another where we can't possibly stay on the surface, right? Because we're going to get down to, right, deeper communion and community with one another. And that just has a way of building a more powerful connection to the scriptures and to the story of God. That's something that came to mind as you were talking.
Yeah, and it's always helpful to know how people interpret their own story. So one person might not think my dad dying is a big deal, and the next guy right next to him in the same small group is obviously thinking that has changed his whole existence. And so it's just really good to know those kinds of things and interpretation of stories, and when especially you're going to interact with content for the rest of the year, 2 years, 3 years, however long.
Yeah, so two thoughts that came to mind as you guys were talking. One is, how we talk about content, even if we're talking about the content of a sermon, is less on the just sort of the idea, intellectual, hey, what'd you think about this idea? What'd you think about this point? And more on the level of story. So, for example, a couple weeks ago, preaching through 1 Peter 3 and talking about Christ overcoming evil and making this point in the sermon of what evil do you find the most threatening to your world that seems to want to swallow everything that you hold dear whole. And so talking about it, not just kind of abstractly, but hey, talk about that point through your life, through a lens of story. So I think that is huge, Bob. And even these past few moments, it's been helpful for me to think, hey, maybe I need to reorient some of the way I ask questions in gospel community, or the way I send out questions to GC leaders, say, hey, ask it this way, so it's more story formed in how we're processing. The other, to the point you made, Bob, about liturgies being rhythmic and having this routine to them, and also seeing that your small group, that meeting, so that regular Thursday meeting, is but a piece of that rhythm. Mm-hmm. So understanding, hey, this night when we gather, we're doing something distinct. But that's not the whole story. That's not the whole piece of formation. So what are the other aspects of life in that small group that you're consistently doing and consistently trying to build? So if it's, hey, once a month on Saturday, we if, you know, service project, or it could be anything really, but just that there's another rhythm that you're forming in other ways that is consistent and regular. I think one of the key points is understanding that particular meeting where you're gathering for a meal or talking about the sermon or having conversation has limitations, and that's fine. It doesn't need to do everything that you want it, you know, want to happen in community all at once, all on that night. So take the strengths of that meeting and what that accomplishes, clarify that and lean in on that. But then what are the other regular points of contact that you as a community are gathering to do stuff to form? So those are two ideas as you guys were talking that came to mind.
That's really good. The other thing I'm thinking is song and prayer. Like the easiest way to lead a small group is to say, open your Bibles. Let's talk about it. What'd you think about the sermon? You know, to lead on the intellectual level, it takes more leadership horsepower, but it's also really powerful when you start leading people to say, hey, let's pray together. Or let's sing together. So last Christmas we had one night with our gospel community, we just sang, we had somebody sit at the piano and we just sang Christmas songs, and it was really powerful in a very simple way. It's not something we did regularly. We didn't worship as part of our small group, but that night just had a way like, oh, we're singing together. And that's a formative experience. The other thing I did early on in this particular gospel community that we've been leading is, I started saying, all right, well, we're going to save 10 minutes at the end for prayer. And then it was all pretty young Christians, you know, people that were a little nervous about like, I don't even really know how to pray, but I would just say like, all right, we're going to pray out loud. So whoever wants to pray, go ahead and pray. And then I would just sit there for 5 minutes of complete silence. And then I would close us in prayer. But what I was trying to form there is like, okay, I'm great that you don't feel comfortable praying right now, but like, we're not going to not pray just because you don't feel comfortable, because actually prayer is something you need to be formed in if you're going to walk with Jesus. Yeah. So we're going to do that together. We're not going to do the whole, like, I'm not going to force you to pray. I'm not going to say like, hey, Chris, would you pray now? I know you feel really weird about it, but go ahead. We'll just all sit, you know, I'm not going to call you out, but I am going to create a context that makes you feel like, gosh, if a month from now, when nobody's praying, something's probably off, you know? Mm-hmm. And what happened is, that space began to get filled by various people. And I would mark it every time a new person prayed out loud. I was like, this is a moment for that person. Like, mm-hmm. that guy just prayed out loud. He's never prayed out loud before. Mm-hmm. That's huge. So those are that's counter formation in a very simple way, in a very basic way. But we're telling a story and we're participating together in a practice, in a spiritual discipline communally that is very foundational to Christian worship and to Christian discipleship. And if we don't do that together, probably, I mean, if I don't do that with my gospel community, probably none of them are going to do it very well on their own. We have to help one another become familiar with the language of prayer, become familiar with the language of worship.
The other thing we have to do is come into these kinds of communities, these kinds of small groups, discipleship relationships, whatever, with the mindset of contribution. Because I think often we come with, well, we'll see how this goes for me tonight, and if I get anything out of it for me or for us. And so it's interesting to twist that towards giving and contributing, because now whatever I say and whatever I do, whenever conversations I have, are hopefully service-oriented. So if there's a struggle towards intellect, knowledge, keep it in the head, you know, and just get, and be shaped. I'm not saying that's totally bad, because you do need to be shaped, but if I come into those kinds of conversations with, man, what can I contribute by interacting with whatever the discussion has, whatever the discussion provides, now I'm coming with a totally different mindset. And so I think it's really good to even check your heart as you come into these kinds of communities as a contributor.
I think a part of that thing that you just said, Dusty, it's important that we as leaders are going into those situations ready to lead in those. If we haven't taken on those forming, you know, liturgies is, you know, the word that we're throwing around in our own lives, there's no way we're going to be able to lead others in that. And so you have to devote yourself to one thing and commit yourself to being shaped in that as you're leading others in it. If you're not doing it on your own, it's going to be really hard to try to bring people along with you, because you have no idea where you're going.
One idea too, like Bob, I'm thinking about what you said a minute ago is leaving time for prayer. I think it's really interesting sometimes to just switch up an entire group and leave a good chunk of it towards prayer. Because I think what Christians tend to do is say, okay, well, we're going to interact with the Bible, then we'll close in prayer. And if we're really spiritual, we might even open in prayer. But we're not going to give time for song and prayer whole, like for a good chunk of the time. Yeah. So if you can switch it up, here's what's really good about just leaving space for prayer is when people start praying, you start realizing where they are at spiritually with the Lord. And people tend to pray better in community. I know that this is even true for me. Like when you get focused with other people in prayer, things... The prayer changes. It's different than journaling your prayer. It's different than praying by yourself. Being in community with prayer is a lot different. Then you start realizing what their worship looks like, how deep their soul is, and not in a judgment way, but that helps you lead them the next time you're together in discipleship ways. And so I think it's good. If you're the leader of this thing, you can just switch it up and call an audible.
Yeah.
Or a counter formation.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that was interesting. I think, Zoe, your question is right on. How can we form our small groups to look differently? And so what we're trying to do is just give you some ideas there of like, all right, here's a few things you could try. I just want to encourage you that you're asking the right question. And, you know, some of it is like, well, counterformation takes time, and it depends on who are you starting with and where are they starting from, right? So counterformation with a group of high school girls is going to look different than counterformation with a group of mid-career professionals. You know, there's just different dynamics at play in various groups of people. And so the reason story is important is because it helps you get a sense of who are we starting with and where are they starting from. Mm-hmm. And then you can sort of adapt what you're trying to do in the group to create counter formation and rituals. But, you know, this is going to take ultimately more than your small group. You mentioned that, Chris. It's not just outside the time, but I'm just saying you need more resources than your small group can bring to bear, because you need to immerse people in the story of the Bible, so they need a little bit of theology. You need to immerse people in just reading of the scriptures, so they need, you know, something like the Daily Liturgy podcast or a Bible reading plan or something that's, you know, and you can't babysit them on all that stuff, nor is it really your job to. So you're going to need to bring some resources to bear. But I think all of that is counter formation, and I don't think we can overestimate, or sorry, I don't think we can underestimate just the value of time, like consistency over time, mm-hmm. right? People being in your living room once a week for a couple of years really does form them, mm-hmm. but it doesn't happen in a month, and it doesn't happen in 6 months. You know, it happens over time. And a group, if you're not careful, can become ingrown and can start to lose its missional focus. And it can just be like, oh, we really like being together, and so we don't want to invite anybody new. We just kind of want to keep doing what we're doing because now we're deep and now we know each other. So you always have to have one eye on the person who's not there yet and on the non-Christian who you want to be in the room. So there's a lot of complexity here, but the question is the right kind of question. And hopefully a few of these ideas or practices give you some hints of, all right, here's a way we can tweak what we're doing as we gather that will provide a more formative and counterformative kind of experience, and maybe operate on a different register than just the intellectual register. A final thought is, don't overcorrect. Don't downplay the intellect, because actually we are changed through ideas that get you said down into your bones, Dusty, mm-hmm. which was a good phrase. It's just ideas matter. They just need to not hover on the surface of our consciousness, but actually get down into us and change us. So I think there's a overcorrection we can make here that moves away from content and away from the Bible and away from intellectual thoughtfulness. And I think that's a move in the wrong direction. What we're looking for here is to go deeper and fuller, not in a different direction.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's conversation. We invite you to join the conversation by shooting us an email at podcast@cdomaha.com. And we hope that you join us next Wednesday for another Wednesday conversation.
Happy third birthday.
Happy birthday. You guys need to say happy birthday. Look Wednesday conversation in the eye and say happy birthday.
Wow. Chris feels like he's coming in. A year
Chris is, yeah, Chris is, he hasn't been here for 3 years. It's like that birthday that you are like, oh, I actually forgot your birthday.
I just came for the cake. I
just came for the party.
Do, instead of a top 10 list for the third birthday, we should do like, these are the ones that we think were really bad.
Here's the worst one.
I can't believe you listened all the way to the end. Right.